student of Gill's since he first came to the peninsula about 12 years ago. And what I'd like to talk about tonight is anger, something that can be a hot topic in Buddhist practice, as in the rest of our lives. So I invite you to use this time as a time of practice also. By that I mean pay attention to yourself. Pay attention to your response to what I'm saying. You may have very little response, or you may have a lot. Just notice that. Notice where in your body you feel that response, so that we don't stop practicing just because we open our eyes and start talking. I'll be speaking from the perspective of both a psychotherapist and a long-term Buddhist practitioner. Over the years, Gill and I have, well, for many years, I should say, Gill and I had this running dialogue, debate about anger. I was coming from the Western therapeutic position. He was coming from a strictly Buddhist position. And we had some very lively discussions. I think over time, each of us came closer to the center or to each other. And he had a child, and I matured, and now the topic rarely comes up. But it can be a hot button for many, many people, and I think it's very worthy of our attention. Whether you agree with what I say or whether it fits your experience or not, use it as a jumping-off place to think about it for yourself. In Buddhist practice, often anger has a bad name. And I think that's partly because it gets lumped into what's called aversion, which means it's a negative emotion. It is often equated with ill will, hatred, avarice, harmfulness. And there's a very, very negative connotation to anger. Also, because it's often equated with ill will or avarice or hatred, there's the sense that it is harmful, that to be angry is harmful. And therefore, it's an undesirable emotion, that it's, in Buddhist terms, unskillful or leads to unskillful action. And therefore, it's to be rooted out. The seeds are to be rooted out. Western psychotherapy, on the other hand, comes from the position that it's a human emotion. It's just one of the emotions. And because it has been suppressed so much in our culture and many other cultures, Western psychotherapy suggests that it needs to be acknowledged and expressed and not suppressed. And sometimes, probably as practitioners, therapists, we've gone a little too far. You know, we've encouraged the expression of anger, sometimes without getting to the root cause. So sometimes therapy gets criticized for getting stuck or letting people get stuck in anger, or for being too willing to have the expression. You know, we have workshops, and in the therapy hour we can pound pillows and use tennis rackets and do all kinds of things to get the expression of anger out, to get the physicalness of anger out. There's a lot of energy in anger. And that certainly has its place. However, if we leave it at that, If we don't go beyond to understand the roots of the anger and to take whatever action might be called for, then that may not be so skillful either, and the criticism may be warranted. A spiritual teacher in Berkeley named Alma suggests that there is spiritual energy in anger. And I think that that can be true. So the suppression of anger in this culture and many others has had some very harmful effects, both physically to the body. It can increase blood pressure. It can cause all kinds of bodily symptoms, ulcers, all kinds of GI upsets. So can the overt or extreme expression of anger. What we learn in Buddhist practice is how to just be with the anger. How to allow it, see it, feel it on the cushion or chair or in our lives without having to react. When we're sitting on the cushion or on the chair and anger arises, the skillful means is to just be with the anger. Feel the energy, acknowledge the thoughts, the thinking that goes with it, perhaps the body sensations. Often there are many body sensations that go with it, but not move, not do anything about it. And at first, I must say, I was very skeptical of this because I came from the position that it should be expressed, that it should not be contained within the body. What I have learned is that there are times that it does need to be expressed. There are times that we need to physically get it out, run, hit a ball or whatever we do. I used to clean house. I had the cleanest house in town when I was angry, to get that energy moving. But I came to appreciate the value of not doing anything with it, just being still, letting it be. And then what I could see was how it changed, how it wasn't this solid thing. It came and went. It was sometimes strong, sometimes not so strong. And it had many different elements, many different components, all the way from a slight annoyance, frustration, irritation, disappointment, to murderous rage. But that it wasn't murderous rage all the time. It might be annoyance for a little bit. It might be frustration for a bit. It might be really intense at times, and then it might abate. It was constantly moving. It was very fluid. It wasn't this solid feeling. When we think it's this solid feeling, then we often get identified with it. So sometimes we tend to say somebody is an angry person, or I'm an angry person, which is not accurate. All of us have anger at some time or another. Until maybe we become an arhat. At that point, perhaps there's no anger. But until we get to that point, we're humans, we're going to have anger. So how can we skillfully deal with that anger? How can we accept it as a human emotion without judgment, without needing to change it, without aversion, without pushing it away or suppressing it? And what I found was being willing to just be with it was a very useful tool. Now, sometimes There are some situations where the anger is so strong, it's impossible just to sit still and be with it. Then it might be more skillful to go out and pace, or to hit a ball against a wall, or do whatever you need to do to get out some of that physicalness of the anger. But then the intention is always to return to dealing with it, not just expressing it or getting it out and then doing nothing. A pitfall on the spiritual path can be to just sit with it, just be with it, and never act. And that's not what we're talking about. That's not what we want to do, because anger is often a red flag, a signal that there's something wrong here, or there's something out of whack, something needs attention. So we want to pay attention to it. It's there for a purpose. Then with mindfulness, we can see, what is it pointing to? What is it that needs our attention? And hopefully act with skillfulness. Buddhist Peace Fellowship is a good example of a community, an organization that takes perhaps the anger of social injustice and without blaming, without creating conflict or a we-they situation, uses that anger to do some good. So a basic precept in Buddhism is non-harming. And there are many ways that harming goes on in our society, one of which is the death penalty. And Buddhist Peace Fellowship, rather than going out and fighting with people about the rightness or wrongness of the death penalty, often just is a presence. Almost always at San Quentin, when there's going to be an execution, there will be a handful of practitioners from Buddhist Peace Fellowship that are there to be a witness, to be a presence. That's a skillful use of what might be in many people anger. Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Christ were all examples of a skillful, non-harming use of anger. All of them certainly had anger and spoke very forthrightly, very strongly at times, but always in a non-harming way, and always with non-harming or love as the underpinning. One of the most helpful things in dealing with anger, I have found, is to find the different components, to really pay attention, to bring your mindfulness to your experience of anger and see just what is this anger about. Often if you do that, you'll find that behind the anger there's another emotion. Sometimes we speak of anger as a secondary emotion. There might be fear. There might be hurt. There's often something else that's behind the anger. And when we get to that, then the way we deal with it might be very different. If we're hurt by something, by someone, then to deal with that hurt rather than the anger can be much more skillful. Or if we're afraid, to face that fear, to deal with that head on, can be much more skillful than the direct anger. So, to act on what is the root of the anger, what is creating the anger, is an essential part, an important part of dealing with the anger. Sometimes that's not possible. Sometimes there's a situation where dealing directly with it, speaking to someone, acting on it, may not be skillful or may not be possible. But to the extent possible, doing something, dealing with it, is important. Sometimes that means setting limits. Anger can be a way of letting us know that we haven't been setting boundaries, we haven't been setting limits. And that can be an important step. That might be with our children, might be with our spouse or partner, might be with a boss, somebody at work, can be any situation. But setting that limit, setting that boundary, might be a very skillful use of the anger. So we see the anger arise, we look at it carefully, clearly, and see what is the root cause, what is creating this anger, and then what is the most skillful way of dealing with it. So we might go to the person, the boss or the spouse or the child or whatever, and let them know what is creating the anger, where perhaps we've been sloppy with a boundary or sloppy with whatever, not being honest, not speaking up, and let them know. In the most loving and gentle and kind way that we can, which might be very idealistic and very difficult to do. But it can make all the difference. In Sharon Salzberg's book on loving kindness, she tells the story of when she was in India being accosted by a man. And she got away, was not harmed, but she went back to her teacher, Manindra, and told him about it. And he said to her, "Sharon, with all the loving kindness you can muster, you should have hit him over the head with your umbrella." Letting her know that, yes, this was a situation that needed a response. But, of course, hitting him over the head with her umbrella was not really going to harm him. And if she did it with loving kindness, as much as she could muster, that was certainly getting the message across, but in a non-harming way. There's a quote, I'm quoting a quote from Daniel Goleman's book on emotional intelligence. Apparently he's quoting Aristotle's Ethics. "To be angry with the right person, to the right degree, at the right time, for the right person, and in the right way, that is not easy." And I would agree that is not easy. But that can be our goal. When we're going to deal with the anger, when we're going to express it, there are several considerations that would help to do it at the right time, in the right place, with the right person, under the right conditions. And one of those is remembering our caring for that person. You know, generally it is somebody that we really care about that we get most angry with. If we didn't care, if we didn't love, then often there's not much anger, there's more indifference. That's not always true, I realize. We can get very angry with somebody we don't know, but very often it's those closest to us that we get most angry with. So sometimes we can see anger as the flip side of love. To the degree that we love, we can also be angry. So remembering that, keeping that in mind when the anger comes up and we want to express it, can be very, very important. Letting someone know, you know, "I love you and I'm really angry." Or, "I want you to hear that I really care about you, and I need to tell you what's on my mind." That takes some restraint, right? Some awareness, some consciousness, which is the value of learning to be with the anger and see it clearly before expressing it. So again, whether it's on the cushion or in our lives, when the anger comes up, if we can stop, be with it, allow the full experience of it, see it clearly, see the different components of it, before we act, before we do anything about it, then we're much more likely to be able to do it in a loving, compassionate way, and we're much more likely to get a similar response, to get a loving response, or to get a caring response, or to get to be heard, to be really heard. Timing can be very important. Sometimes it can be very valuable to set an appointment to deal with anger rather than just spouting it out. After both people have had a chance to cool, you can set a time later that day, the next day, as close to the time that it occurs as possible, probably. But setting that time gives people a chance to be prepared, not caught off guard, and gives much more likelihood that it will be dealt with in a rational way. I think it's really important to dispel the notion that anger equals ill will or hatred or avarice. For me, that's just not so. I can feel a lot of anger. I can be very, very angry with no ill will at all. In fact, I can wish loving kindness for the person with whom I'm angry, but still feel very intense anger. So I think that separating is very important. And that's been one of the issues I've had with anger in the Buddhist community. And in fact, I went to a workshop, I don't know, a year or two ago with a Buddhist teacher who talked about that very thing and suggested that at the time of the Buddha, anger was considered hatred, was considered harming, and that's why there developed such a strong prohibition against it. And that truly the idea was the non-harming, not the anger itself. That makes a lot of sense to me because, of course, we don't want to be harmful, but also we do want to recognize the anger. We all have it. And it's not useful to suppress it. It can be important to recognize that often anger is the best response to a situation. There are many situations where if we didn't respond with anger, it would be pretty unhealthy. I'm thinking of injustices, oppression, slavery, many social injustices, where if we didn't feel anger, we might not be fully human. We might be in denial. Sometimes in our culture, there's a craziness. Some things are crazy. And it is appropriate to feel anger. So it's important that we not push it aside or deny it, but recognize that it's a healthy response. Then what we want to do is deal skillfully with it. Sometimes psychotherapy has been criticized for just encouraging people to adapt to society, to adapt to a crazy situation. And I think that's true. I think there are times when psychotherapy, you know, encourages people to adapt to situations rather than acknowledging the situation is not good and then encouraging people to deal with it. An example for me was when I used to work with children, often they would come in and complain about the homework that they got. You know, often it's the bright children that have difficulty in school. And I worked with several young, very bright kids who were having trouble in school. You know, they weren't doing their homework or their grades weren't good. And what was going on? Why were they working way below their potential? And time after time, what they told me was, I know how to do that. I'm not going to do it 20 times at home. Or I understand that. There's no need to do that. The homework was not relevant. It was not necessary. And rather than encouraging them, you know, to do it 20 times or write it or whatever, you know, I agreed with them. There was no need to do something repetitively that they already understood, that they already knew how to do. And I would talk with the parent and encourage the parent to speak with the teacher and see if there couldn't be some more creative homework, some more creative work for that child to do than just the repetition. Now, sometimes, you know, teachers don't like that. Sometimes parents don't like it either. They don't want to have to go and confront. They want me to get their kid to do their homework, and I wouldn't do it because I didn't feel that was what was most appropriate for that child. There are lots of situations, work situations, say, where a client comes in and there is a real injustice going on, and they want to know how can they be comfortable in this job, how can they adapt. And often I will suggest that they don't adapt, but that they see the situation for what it is and then do what they can. Sometimes there's not a whole lot they can do, but often there is more than we think we can do. So again, I want to underscore this idea that anger can be a very valuable flag, a very important symptom that we need to pay attention to. It means that something needs attention. Something needs our attention, and perhaps something needs to be done. You know, I was saying a bit ago that anger can be just the flip side of love. And my experience is that in relationships, if we don't learn to deal with the anger, if we don't get to the point of anger and deal with it, our relationships stay very superficial. Probably you have had, as I have, relationships where things were always very nice. You know, we always got along, but there wasn't much depth. It might be fun for a while, but there wasn't a depth. And it can be very scary in relationships to get to that anger. But probably you've experienced, as I have, that once you do and once you deal with it, it tends to clear the air. And there can be a much deeper connection, a much deeper meaning in that relationship. Because anger is a part of life. It is there, whether we like it or not, whether we deny it or not, whether we suppress it or not. It is a part of life. And the more we can understand it, the more we can deal with it, it enriches our relationships. Because in any relationship of any length or any import, from a friendship to a marriage, you know, any friendship, if you're with a person enough, there's going to be conflict. things are going to happen because we're all different. We all have different ways of doing things. And so I'm going to do something that angers somebody else. They're going to do something that angers me. And I have had friendships end because we get to that point and it can't be dealt with and one or the other leaves and it's over. Rather than dealing with it at that point, dropping to a deeper level of respect, a deeper level of understanding, a deeper way of knowing each other more fully and more deeply. So we have about 10 minutes. I'd like to invite your comments, questions, disagreements, whatever you'd like to say.
I'm thinking that it's not that you really don't know that person if you get angry with them. That's more an expression of disappointment that you're talking about, that they're doing something that you think they shouldn't do. Like you don't hit someone, you have a relationship that then they do something, you're more disappointed with what they're doing. So I don't know if you can ever be angry with someone you love, really love. I mean, you can say that you're in love with them, or you love them. And the other thing is social injustice. The only caveat that I saw with myself when I was looking at social injustice is that sometimes I would be very judgmental and decide that something was going on was completely wrong. And I would shut myself to the other side, but I would never listen to someone who thinks what's going on is right. So in a way, the thing that I was concerned about is to arrive at a result and say, okay, what is going on is wrong. And then I stop the line. Then, when I say, okay, what's going on is wrong, is that basically I'm shutting the door to the possibility that I may be wrong.
Yes, that's true. But being angry does not necessarily mean blaming or making the other person or the other side wrong. Now, often in social action situations, that happens. Happens a lot. We read it in the paper, see it on TV all the time, right? Where the two sides are throwing rocks at each other or worse. That's not skillful use of anger. That's just creating more anger, more enmity, and not getting anything done. But being angry does not necessarily mean that we close ourselves off to the other person. It can. That's an unskillful use of anger, but it doesn't have to be. We can be angry and still be open. And that's what Buddhist Peace Fellowship is about. That's what some of the faith-based organizations are about. Not always and not all, but often they are. There's a recognition that we don't want to pit ourselves against anybody else. So we can demonstrate, we can act, we can be out there, we can listen at the same time. We can invite the other side. A good example is Thursday and Friday morning, right here on the corner, where, you know, Planned Parenthood is right across the street. And on Thursday and Friday mornings, there are always big signs and demonstrators out on the corner, anti-abortion demonstrators. And several of us from this community have gone over and spoken to them. And it's been very interesting. It's a situation where we could very easily get pulled into a real adversarial position. And myself and those that I know that have gone over and talked to them have been able to avoid that by not closing off, by being willing to listen to them, listen to their position, not necessarily agreeing, not necessarily making them wrong, asking questions or stating our position, and the experiences that I know about, you know, that we have been able to stay very calm and not create an adversarial position. So it can be done. It takes skill, it takes intention, but it can be done. Your first point, I would challenge you to look at the disappointment and the people you love. Because, as I suggested a little bit ago, I think it's the people that we love that we feel the most disappointed with. And if we don't care that much about somebody, the disappointment isn't so big, isn't such a big thing. But it's the people closest to us, the people that we care the most about, that it matters most what they do, that we can feel the most disappointment. So my experience has been that it's the people we love most that we get the most angry with. And that in that, anger is not hatred at all. It's anger. It's disappointment. It's frustration. It's upset. But not necessarily hatred. And that's where it's gotten misinterpreted and misunderstood. Yes.
But yes. Then, after you realize that, if you go overboard, then you think, oh, I feel terrible because I hurt someone because I was so angry and I was mean to them. Right. And then the anger punishes yourself.
Right. Yes, and that's a very good example of where we can get stuck in the anger, because there is power, there is energy, and especially for someone like a woman or someone that's been oppressed in some way, yes, the anger feels so good. And that's fine, you know. And we need to keep going. Yes. Yes. We need to get to the hurt. Because ultimately, it's the hurt that needs to be dealt with. And it's the hurt or the fear or whatever that will resolve. I think both Buddhist practice and therapy want a resolution of the anger. They want to get to the root of it. Yes, but we have to keep going to get to that root, to get to what the ultimate cause is. Yeah. Just one thing I might say in relation to that, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, who is so revered and such a wonderful Vietnamese teacher, talks about not sowing the seeds of anger. I think he probably would have some disagreement with what I'm saying, at least when I knew him in the past. Because he sees, of course, the result of so much anger in the world and thinks that the expression of anger sows the seeds for more anger. And, of course, it can. It can. If we you know, are not skillful or not careful or not mindful of the anger, then getting angry can lead to more anger and more anger and more anger. Again, that's not what I'm talking about. And that's why it's so important to get to the root so that we're not just encouraging the anger or feeding it or fueling it, but actually getting to the root so that in both therapy and in meditation practice, we're uprooting the seeds of that anger so that eventually, ultimately, it won't be there. Yes?
I just wanted to offer that I've been so inspired by the life of Nelson Mandela as an example of somebody who's had the full circle of anger, and here in his 80s, I feel like he's one of the most articulate people on forgiveness.
Yes.
And it astounds me after you know, learning about what he's gone through in mm-hmm. a lifetime mm-hmm. and all the anger of his youth mm-hmm. as a lawyer and then all the years of false imprisonment. But he's right. one of the foremost international speakers on forgiveness. And it just made me think when the other two were speaking that his life is such a testament to what you're saying is skillful.
That's right. And if you read his autobiography, yeah, you see the change over his lifetime. Yeah.
When we're talking about dealing with a situation where you're angry with someone, and you want to be careful not to sow the seeds of anger in them, and all that, you didn't mention anything about what to do when you get a feeling that the other person isn't ready for this. It's a communication, and we have to take into account whether the person that we're trying to heal this anger with is ready or not ready, and what to do, how to back out of it gracefully and say, this isn't going to work, or what do we do with it?
Mm-hmm. Very good point. That's right. I sort of alluded to it with the timing, and but you're right. You're right. Even with that, there has to be a willingness on both sides to resolve it or to be able to deal with it. Yes. So the appointment, you know, is one way. But sometimes it may take longer than that, or it may be such a painful issue that the other person is not going to be ready for a long time to deal with it. And that can be very discouraging, very disappointing. Yes. Then I think we have to recognize that and let go. And then deal with our anger in another way, maybe with someone else, just with ourselves. In a way that doesn't close our heart. You know, that's the big thing. Not letting that anger or the unwillingness not close our heart. Yes, yes, it can be. It can be very hard. That's right. And if it happens, it happens. Then we're just very mindful of that. But if we keep our heart open, it doesn't mean the other person is ever going to get to the point where it can be dealt with. But at least we won't be suffering and we won't be sowing more seeds of anger. And depending on the situation, the person, etc., we might make periodic attempts. Or we might just sit back and wait. And if our heart is open, that's really all we can do. The other person then will experience that openness. Again, that still doesn't mean they'll be able to deal with us. But at least the possibility is there.
Well, I can see another benefit to myself if I did that, because having my heart not open over the issue, it's a warning of myself or something
like
that.
Yeah, you know, that's right.
Make it easier for me to quit hurting myself over this unresolved issue. Mm-hmm. I'm blaming myself for not being able to do what may turn out to be impossible. Mm-hmm. That's hard, but it may be better than keeping an active surplus about it.
Right. Right. And it is very hard, sometimes impossible, to keep our hearts open. Mm-hmm. But we can keep that in mind, and we can be mindful. We can pay attention. We can set the intention to open our hearts, to not close off to that person, and then let go. You know, letting go is a big part of our practice, and sometimes that's the crucial thing, to be able to let go. I'm thinking of when Fred Luskin was here in January, was it, and spoke about forgiveness, and although he's very passionate about it, I remember he said several times that it was one tool. That really what he wanted us to know was that that was another way, Not that that was the only way, that we all always had to forgive, forgiveness was the only way, but that that was one more tool.
It might be available as a last resort.
When all else fails, you can. And I'm also reminded of what Jack Kornfield says about we have to let our hearts break over and over and over and over again. That's been enormously helpful to me. You know, when the other person isn't going to open or isn't ready, you know, it might break our hearts. But what I've learned through this practice is that our hearts can break and we can survive.
More than once.
More than once. Many times. Many times. Yes. Yes. And that we don't have to wall off. We don't have to protect ourselves from our hearts breaking. It can be very poignant, actually. You know, it may not be our preference. We may not want it, but it can be very poignant and help keep us open to allow our hearts to break over and over. And that might be different for each one of us, you know. But a very important concept for me, that I can allow my heart to break over and over and over again. And that helps me not to shut off, not to turn off to anything or anybody. But my heart can break and it's okay. It hurts, but I survive and go on. And in fact, it's appropriate. Just like anger might be appropriate sometimes, a broken heart might be appropriate to whatever the situation. I'm sorry, what?
Would it be wise to just protect your heart, you know, stand back, protect your heart, and walk away and do something?
Well, I think that's the prevailing idea, and that's what most of us have lived with most of our lives, yes. You know, I think that's where that saying, I don't need this, comes from. Yeah, protecting ourselves by whatever means, whether that's walking away or saying something or whatever. What I have come to learn through this practice is that, as Dick was suggesting, protecting myself may only harm myself. It closes me off. And that... If I'm protecting myself, you know, if it closes my heart, it may not be bad, but it's not what I want. If my heart is closed, that hurts me more than it hurts you. It may also hurt you, but it really hurts me more.
Closes the joy, too.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yes.
I think people need to decide which way to go in an individual situation. If you can go to the other end of the earth and never see this person again and forget about it, well, that might work just fine. But if on the other hand, if you work with this person or live with them, you're going to have to deal with it, you know? Because every time you see them, it'll hurt more.
And I would just add to that, Dick, if you go to the other side of the world and your heart is still closed to that person, then you've still got that closed heart to deal with. If you can stay open, and it's much easier to stay open on the other side of the world. Yeah.
So do you have an obligation to help the person, the anger?
No. Right. You have no obligation. You may want to. You may try. Probably 9 times out of 10, you can't. No. No. Probably the best help you can be is dealing with your own anger, not closing your heart, staying open, and just allowing them to be who they are. That's probably the most helpful, the most skillful thing you can do. Because then, a couple things. One, then they don't have you to fight against. If you're not fighting with them, if you're not closed off, then they don't have anybody to fight against. And that means that the anger or whatever they're feeling stays with them. You know, when we fight with somebody, we help draw off some of that emotion from that person. If we refuse to fight, then that person is left with that emotion. Also, then, if your heart is open, they can experience that. They can feel that. They may not recognize it, or they may not consciously recognize it, but it's there. They can feel that openness, that caring on your part. And that is what might lead them to get to a place where they're willing to deal with it, to let down the guard a little bit. Because if somebody's not willing to deal with my anger, they're protecting, right? They're protecting themselves. If I refuse to deal with your anger, I'm protecting myself. So if I get from you that you're not going to turn away from me because of that, you're still going to be open and be there, then that's an invitation to me to let down my guard and be vulnerable and deal with you, speak with you. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, but on the other side, and you know, I just, you know, from like my attitude is just, you know, people who are not really cheerful or nice to me or something, I avoid them, period. You know, why waste time dealing with these kind of people? I mean, unless you have to deal with them because they're family members. So.
Oh, right. Right. Well, that's right. There may be lots of people that are angry there's absolutely no need to deal with. No, I think we were coming from the premise that there's somebody that you do care about, that there's an issue that's difficult to deal with. Yeah.
My heart was open. But in reality, I found that I had shut myself. This concept of violence, which exists, which, as much as non-violence does, and that I think enabled me to connect much, you know, almost entirely with that person than before, when I was thinking, you know, he's wrong and I'm right.
Yes.
Let me just teach him.
Yes. Right. That's a real trap, isn't it? We're all teachers and we're all learners. We learn from each other. Well, it's 8:55. Let's sit for the last 5 minutes.